8:05 on a Friday on the West Coast, 11:05 on the East Coast. Joining me, I think from the East Coast, Michael Garvey. Michael, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah, East Coast, you got it.
All right. We're on the East Coast.
Maryland, Annapolis specifically.
Annapolis, that's a not a bad place to be if you got to be on the East Coast, man. Nice going.
No, yeah, it's pretty nice.
All right. First of all, Michael, we need to introduce everybody to you. First, and I want to thank you for coming on All Marine Radio and talking to us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. We talked to, I don't know, probably a couple months ago the first time, and so we were not up and running yet, and so wanted to have you on. And first of all, born and raised where?
I'm sorry, what?
Born and raised where? Where'd you?
Born and raised. I was born in Maryland, more southern Maryland, but I've been pretty much raised in Annapolis.
Okay, and how did the Marine Corps get on your radar? Did you have anybody in your family that was part of it? Or?
No. It was actually just a friend of mine. His dad was in the Navy. He taught at the Naval Academy. And he would just, you know, berate his dad constantly for being in the Navy. And so he ended up joining the Marines, and he was a year older than me. So I just kind of followed suit.
Your friend rebelled against his dad and got you into the Marine Corps, too. That's nice. So so when did you join the Marine Corps?
2006.
All right, so 2006. So it's been on for, what, almost probably a good 4 years at that point, 2002, 3, 4, 5, and you joined in 2006. And what did you think when you joined? You get to Parris Island and you start going through the process. Did you think it was for you? Did you think, what the hell did I do to myself? What were your thoughts as you went through boot camp?
I guess the first week, I was like, I don't know about this. Like, I don't know if I made the right decision. But I was like, there's no way I'm leaving. Like, that's not going to happen. So I just kind of settled into it. And I was like, well, this is life. And, I mean, once you realize how many just games they play in boot camp and how you'll never really win, it becomes not as bad, I think.
Right. Those who want to compete, that's a bad, lonely road you want to go down. You don't really want to do that because I had a kid like that in my OCS class, Lou Gargano from New York City. And he ultimately wound up, you know, I want to say in about week three, sitting on his rack. And this kid's, you know, he's 23 years old. It's not like he's 18. 23 years old, crying. I can't take it anymore. That's right, man. This is what they do. They break human beings. Stop messing with them. But sounds like you're a smart 18-year-old, Michael. How do you get in? Did you sign up open contract? Did you want to be a grunt? How did you get pointed towards an MOS?
Well, I wanted to be a grunt, so I was getting a little trouble as a high schooler. I ended up dropping out my senior year, and I was already depth into the program, so. Like, after a while, when it became obvious that I didn't really feel like going back to school, my recruiter just kind of finagled some stuff. And he got me in as a combat engineer without a diploma.
How does that work? I thought if you didn't have a diploma, you had to be a grunt.
I didn't think you could be either. But, yeah, you would think, no diploma, throw him right into the infantry. But no, he switched it to combat engineer, and I didn't even know what it was at the time.
So the combat engineer is lower than the infantryman on the intellectual scale of the Marine Corps? That's awesome.
I think the guy swinging the metal detector might be a tad bit lower, yeah.
That's, I didn't know, as a grunt, I didn't know that. That's awesome. I thought because they operated, I thought they operated machinery. I thought they were supposed to be smart guys.
No, I've never operated any machinery.
Nice.
Just metal detector.
So you're a combat engineer?
Yes.
All right, and then when do you deploy? How many deployments did you do?
I did two. I went to Iraq in 2008 and then Afghanistan in 2011.
Where in Iraq did you go?
I bounced around. I went from Habaniya Chihuahua to South San Jose.
Wow, that is bouncing around. Habania outside of Fallujah, Rawa. It's not on the edge of the planet, but you can see the edge of the planet from Rawa, right? And
yeah,
I didn't even know where the other place you mentioned is. Where the hell is that?
I was told on the Syrian border,
okay.
Closer up north. It definitely got progressively worse. Like by the time we got there, we were just living out of trucks.
Nice.
There was no patrol base. There wasn't nothing.
So what? What were you doing? Were you doing route clearance? Were you improving? You know, doing engineer stuff? What were you doing?
Pretty much border patrol.
Oh, really? You're just being an instrument.
Yes.
Nice.
Up and down the line, trying to stop smugglers, whatever it was.
Smugglers. They've only been doing that since before Christ was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of success.
We're gonna get the jump on them.
Exactly. You know what? And that's the truth, too. Those smuggling routes have been there, you know, for thousands of years. Like, they just switch up what they're smuggling. When Saddam was there, it was pornography and booze. When he left, it was satellite dishes because they wanted, you know, they want their video porn. And and so it just changes what they smuggle. Michael Garvey, our guest, he a Marine. So you come back and then you go to you do your Afghanistan deployment.
Yeah, a couple of years later in Afghanistan.
And where were you? Where,
1-9.
With 1-9. And so you were with 1-9, and when did you go there?
When?
Yep.
2011. I was only there for like 3 months before I got hurt.
All right, so you, and where were you in Afghanistan?
Marja,
and you get hurt in 2010 or 11, I'm sorry?
11.
And what
2011.
Month? What month did you get wounded?
Oh, August 2011. August 14th, to be specific.
Where did you get wounded, Marja?
I was shot in the lower abdomen and left thigh.
What part of the city?
It was actually right on the outskirts. I guess technically in the Bari.
In the Bari? What time
yeah,
of day? What time of day?
It was during our morning patrol, so I would say before noon.
I medevaced your ass.
Really?
I did. I was with the 1st Marine Regiment at the time and ran the Combat Operations Center.
Get out of here.
I swear to God. Yeah, me and, I mean, if you ever listen, you hear a guy named Rudy come on. We had two air officers that were awesome guys, really smart, and they did great stuff with medevacs. They learned how to cheat the system, get the birds in the air quicker and stuff like that. And, no, man. How small a world is that?
No, that's nuts.
That's crazy.
Small world things like this blow my mind all the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because it happens the same way when this happens. Like, I got wounded in this state. Like, okay, well, where were you? Marja? Where in Marja? And, Wow. So gunshot wounds?
Yeah.
Gunshot wounds to the stomach and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Stomach and leg.
All right. Talk to me about, I mean, this whole program is devoted to post-combat related mental health and veterans and making sure we stay connected so we don't go to any more funerals. Talk about the recovery. I mean, so you spend all this time with your combat engineer, you know, Bubba's. You get embedded with 1-9, and I'm sure you made friends there or not. You know, but you're with your combat engineer guys, and you know, you live that tight life, and then also when you're wounded, you're yanked out of that, and you know, you start the process of Germany, Bethesda, or wherever they sent you. Talk to us about that experience. Did the Marine Corps have it down by then, and you felt connected, or did you feel, you know, kind of adrift and separate? What was your experience like?
I love those guys from 1-9. I just went for Memorial Day weekend to go visit the guy who saved my life, Ethan McAlee, up in Ohio. You know, we try and see each other every once in a while. But when I left, yeah, I was crushed. Like, I didn't want to leave. I remember while still in Afghanistan, while they're loading me onto a surgeon's table or whatever, just like saying, don't tell my parents, don't tell my family, I don't want to go home. Like, just like nonsense. Like there's no way I was staying.
Can I tell you a quick story? The doctors from the surgical hospital came over to see us one day in the Combat Operations Center, and those guys were awesome for us anyway, and as were the dust-off helicopters. The dust-off helicopters, if the LZ, for instance, went in your medevac, if the LZ was hot and you were crashing, you were in danger of losing your life, they didn't wait until the LZ cooled off. They went in and they got you. They were awesome, and we had a great relationship. But the senior doctor came over one day and he said, "Hey, what do you guys do to these Marines? Because they come in and they're arguing with me about going to Germany. That don't send me to Germany, because if you send me to Germany, I'm going to get sent home." And he said, "I've never seen that before, and I've done this for a long time." He said, "You know, they come in and they're arguing with me on the on as we take them to surgery. Don't send me home. I've got to stay here, Doc. You can make that happen." And you were one of those guys, Michael.
Yeah, I guess. It's delusional. Like one of those memories you don't really remember.
Right, right. Talk about that's, but you know, and again, crazy, irrational, but that pull of your comrades so strong.
Yeah. I mean, even after I got home, like the whole time I just felt terrible that I had a bed. Like I would just go out and sleep in the backyard and, you know.
Knowing that they were still there.
I feel some sort of connection. Right. Like if they're cold tonight, I'm going to be cold tonight, you know.
Amazing. Amazing. So you come back and did you go to the Bethesda? Where did they send you?
Yeah, they sent me to Bethesda. I was there for 15 days. And then since I'm from Annapolis, they just sent me back to Annapolis after that. And someone would come pick me up and bring me down there 2-3 times a week to go to my appointments.
And then were you medically retired from the Marine Corps, or did you serve out your enlistment? How did that go?
Well, my enlistment was about over. I had to extend to go to Afghanistan.
Okay.
But, yeah, they medically retired me in 2013.
It was probably cool for you because you were close to home and had a lot of support from your family and whatnot.
Yeah, that was nice. It was nice to not be like in the middle of nowhere and then have to have everyone come visit you in the hospital all the time, which is kind of an awkward thing. But you don't really know what to do. You don't know what to say. Everyone's just kind of staring at you like you're a pet in a glass or something.
But, okay, so you have how many, how big's your family?
I'm the oldest of 5 siblings, and then I have my parents, so. And then there's a lot of family in the area. And then when you're that close, your friends can come visit.
Yeah. So you were like full-time pet in the glass? Did that feel awkward for you? I mean, or was there, I'm sure you loved them coming and seeing people, but, you know, I think at some point in talking to Marines, it's like, it gets a little unnerving, or you get a little bit irritated telling the story and talking about yourself, and you just don't want to do it anymore. What was similar experience?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's like you don't. It was awkward for me. It's like I don't know what you guys want from me. I don't know. Like sometimes I just want to be alone. But everyone was like, "Oh, we'll keep someone around. That's not really necessary." Yeah, I appreciate it, but if I could just gather my thoughts for a little while.
Mm-hmm. What were you, so before you were wounded, did you want to stay in the Marine Corps? Did you have thoughts about, you know, what you would do when you said you extended to go on the deployment? Were you going to come home and get out and have something in mind? Did you, what was in your thought in terms of your future?
I've been doing some electrical work. And I enjoyed that at the time. I thought it was a fulfilling job and just something else to do, like the next step. And so in the back of my head, I thought that's what I would do. But then after I got hurt, I just completely abandoned that. But, okay. I mean, I loved the Marine Corps, but I was just, you know, I'd had my fill.
All right. So you're going
to... I just wanted to do 2 deployments. I wanted to go to both wars. That was my goal. Okay, so now I've done both. There you go.
Boom. I'm out. And so how does the... First of all, I've got an email for you. Mac, that is crazy that you met her back then. I'm listening, and my jaw hit my desk when I heard that.
Yeah,
is he physically okay? So how are you doing physically now, Michael?
Pain, I still have stomach issues, but physically, I do all right.
Okay, so still have some lingering issues, but are they going to be long-term, or is it simply a matter of it's going to take time for you to heal?
I think it is what it is right now, like long-term. I have a lot of nerve damage in my left leg, and it's plateaued, and they say the nerves grow slower than anything else, and by the time, like my symptoms have pretty much leveled off for the last year and a half, so they're telling me now that what I'm feeling now is what I'll probably continue to feel.
All right. Another
They've offered to do different things, like burn the nerve so I just can't feel my leg, or put a spinal implant in that blocks the signals to my brain. But both of those sound worse than what I'm going through.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm not cool with that. I'll take care of it. I don't need you guys to start jacking with my body. Let's see. I have a text message question for you here. I'm curious to how, when Michael got back, how did the comedy thing get on his radar? So, Michael, you come back, you're going through all this. How does a career as a comedian, how does that get on your radar?
Well, I've just always loved comedy. This is what everyone says. And when I got back, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was kind of just floating around. And then I started listening to a ton of comedy podcasts, watching a lot more comedy. I ended up starting to write jokes. And I wrote jokes for about a year, and I just couldn't convince myself to get on stage. Like, I was too nervous. So that was my main thing. I've never actually looked at it as a career. It was just something I wanted to do and try and see if I could do it. Now I'm slowly having to decide if that is something, because I enjoy it a lot, and it's a lot of fun, and it's progressing.
All right, we'll talk about that in a second, but I have another email question for you. Mac, we've heard, as your guests have come on, different experiences with the VA. What was Michael's experience with the VA? So what was your experience so far been with VA medicine? Good, bad, mixed?
I don't love it. I'm not a huge fan. I don't go see them for anything anymore. I loved Bethesda. The 2 years I would go there all the time was great. They took really good care of me. And then after that, I moved everything to the Naval Academy since I'm in Annapolis.
Right.
And they were just about awful. And so I moved to the VA in Baltimore, and then after a while got the same impression from them. Now I have all private care.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, since we started doing the show, I think, you know, you go to transition classes when you get out, and I think the transition classes should change, and they should bring in veterans and Marine veterans to talk to Marines anyway and say, hey, look, this is what you can expect, and you're going to have to fight for the care that you want. And there's a number of ways to plug into it, whether it's big VA, whether it's the vet centers, or go to a county veteran service officer. But expect a mixed bag, because that's what most guys experience. Don't get frustrated and walk away because, you know, that's not the right answer, too. You obviously have a private option. That's good. A lot of guys don't, and that's how bad things begin to happen. So it's interesting, Michael, that your experience, son, is very typical from the guys I interview in this kind of mixed bag that we get when we go to the VA. As you went through that frustrating for you, did you consider not going or whatnot?
Yeah. Like, I stopped going to doctors completely for a while. It was just the difference between what I had and then what I ended up in. I'm just getting irritated with doctors, and I'm not getting any, like, nothing's changing, nothing's getting any better. So what's the point? And by that time, I was so doctored out, too.
Right. I can imagine. What about, next email says this, Michael's physical injury is one thing. Is he a PTSD guy? Did he get treated for that? His thoughts on that? Michael, are you a PTSD guy? I can't imagine you would be.
I am a PTSD guy.
Cool.
Yes. And, yeah, I mean, I'm still dealing with it. My, the doctor I see now, yesterday, just asked me to start coming in twice a week. I was like, well, that's probably a good sign.
You know what, but hey, with our tribe, man, it is what it is, and it's a cool thing that you're going, because, you know, it's what you have to do to kind of try to keep the wheels on. Or do you know who Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Workman is? Navy Cross winner from Fallujah.
And that.
Well, he struggled with PTSD. I mean, I'll tell you a quick his story. He's with 3-5, gunfight in Fallujah. They killed 24 bad guys. They lose three Marines in this three-hour fight. He's awarded the Navy Cross. But the only thing he feels is failure because they lost three Marines that day, three guys he knew, and frustrated because they couldn't get there quick enough. So now the Marine Corps, he goes down to the drill field. He gets relieved as a drill instructor because of his PTSD. And then the next week he gets awarded the Navy Cross, and now he's a celebrity. And if you can imagine all that colliding in one guy's head as you feel like a failure, a tremendous amount of stress to deal with as you come back and try to be normal. And then he goes to a therapist, and an Iranian woman at Quantico, and she says, well, the reason you're so angry is because you're part of an unjust war.
Oh.
Exactly. Can you imagine that?
I must have calmed him down.
Well, hey, I told a buddy of mine, and my buddy said, no kidding. In fact, Rudy, the guy who medevaced you, the air officer, he said, you know, she's lucky he didn't snap her neck. You walk in there, and you think you're going to be treated with, you know, these people are going to help me, finally. I'm going to talk to somebody, and she tells you you're part of an unjust war. I mean, the top of his head could have blown off, but... no, but I mean, therapy is a good thing. Do you like the guy you go to? Is he a combat guy? Is he just a therapist? Tell me about that.
Now I've been having trouble finding like someone who's better at dealing with combat injuries in the area. Right now it's just a therapist.
Yeah.
I've gone to the vet center before, but I kind of got the same thing from there. I like the vet center in Annapolis. But it is just a lot of counseling that's not combat-related. No, I've actually never had a therapist that's, like, kind of really good at that.
You know, and this is what's crazy. In my experience, I walked into a vet center. The first guy I spoke to was 5-time Bronze Star winner in Vietnam. You know what? And so it's like you're home, right? Guy knows, he knows what it was like. And then my second guy was a Army Special Forces guy from Vietnam, but they're awesome guys. And I can't imagine, like, how do you talk to a therapist who doesn't know what you're talking about?
It can be difficult. Sometimes I can see, it's actually a woman, but I can see in her face that I need to pull back sometimes.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, I mean, that can be difficult.
Well, yeah, especially when you're
there. This is getting to be too much for you.
So I'm going to help you out. I'm going to help you out here, and I'm going to throttle back on the story.
You know what?
This is getting too much for you in the therapy session, so I'm going to throttle back the story and not give you all the details because I'm not sure that you could take this.
That's how it goes sometimes, yeah.
That's so crazy. Our guest, Michael Garvin, Marine combat engineer, was wounded in Afghanistan while supporting 1st Battalion, 9th Marine, the Walking Dead, as they're known, and they were a part of RCT-1 at the time. And I was there, and so that makes us battle buddies, Michael. Nice.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Awesome.
That connection.
Awesome. And we're just talking VA, being wounded, treatment, and things like that. If you have a comment or a question, you can text us 714-661-8107, email live.allmarineradio@gmail.com, or you can call 714-884-4294. Michael, So you're going to therapy. I don't know how it works with talking to somebody who doesn't have the experience. It's just like, how do you give me advice on how to deal with this? You know, and so that's why I think the VA needs to have a huge push to recruit veterans to be therapists. So when you walk in, and that was the whole concept of the Vet Center initially, that when you walked in, you're going to find fellow Vietnam veterans there, that you were going to walk in, they were going to say, hey, man, what's up? And you're going to feel at home. So, I don't know. Good luck.
That would be a great idea. I mean, because a lot of people are trying to help, but unless you have, like, that mindset, you kind of know where it's coming from. I think it's harder to connect and to actually help.
Yeah, as you said, you're telling your story, and you're seeing her get uncomfortable.
Yeah, sometimes tear up a bit.
And
I start to feel bad.
I'm supposed to be tearing up, not you.
Yeah.
This is wrong. Anyway, Michael Garvey, our guest. So how does the comedy thing, you'd always thought, you know, you always watched it. How do you transition to getting up on stage the first time?
Well, I couldn't do it. Terrified. I'm going to cuss here. Keep trying not to.
Hey, it's the internet. It's the internet. You can cuss.
Okay, cool. I saw a post for a comedy boot camp class for veterans. It was like a 6-week class where they kind of teach you about comedy, and then it culminates with a graduation show. And I didn't want to take it really for the class, even though it ended up being really helpful. I just knew at the end they would throw me onto stage and I would be committed to it, and so I would do that. And then since then, I've just been like addicted to it.
Really? So you get up on stage and did it go well? Did it not go well? What?
Yeah, it went really well. Those shows are great, though. It's a large veteran crowd plus family members. So it's like really supportive. It's not like walking into a regular comedy club and people are just expecting so much from you. People are just kind of like proud that you're up there doing it. So, but after you do that show, you got to hit like the normal grind. That's when you get like taken down 12 pegs.
They're not so supportive.
You're like, no, I need to write more. I need to work on this harder.
So, so what is your material? Is it mostly your military experience centric, or is it life centric? What is your routine like?
I have a combination of both. I have a service dog who I've had for about a year and a half, and like my reaction with the public and the dog makes up a lot of material. People just ask me the dumbest fucking questions, and repeatedly. Like, when I first got back, I was like, why do I keep running into these people? And then a year and a half later, I'm still getting the same questions, and I'm like, oh, it's just people.
So, give me the dumbest question that you get on a regular basis.
What's the dog's disability? Can you tell me what the dog did in Iraq? A lot of people just come up to you straight up and be like, what's wrong with you? You don't look blind.
That's it?
Stuff like that. They ask me what I'm training for.
What's the all-time stupidest question that you've ever got?
I don't know. One of the weirdest was at Jiffy Lube once. The lady across from me asked me what the dog did in Iraq and Afghanistan, because it's one of those little vests, so it is a little confusing for people.
Right.
But I told her, I was like, no, it's not the dog, it's me. And it got kind of quiet, and then a couple minutes later, she was like, you know, I'm a professional psychic, and I can tell that you're going to end up writing a book. Like, but you're going to figure out that it wasn't the dog that didn't go to war? You're excellent at your job.
You know what? I love psychics, though. I have to tell you. Because I think it's the biggest bunch of bullshit in the world. But I think it's funny, the stuff they, like, look at you and tell you. And I don't know why I find it so amusing. Probably because it's so absurd. You know? And yet they make money off it. I'm a psychic. Oh, really?
Yeah, they're great manipulators. But if I do end up writing a book, I'm a believer, and now I got to go find this lady.
What?
If you can tell me what else I'm going to do with my life.
Nice. Well, yeah, at some point, you know, you're a blossoming comedian. Of course you're going to write a book. You have to.
I'm also a high school dropout, so, you know, I'm not in a real hurry to write a book.
Can't the recruiter go back and do something about that? I mean, come on.
Ship me a high school diploma?
Yeah.
Well, I got my GED after I got hurt, so.
There you go.
State of Maryland, it counts.
All right. My son, who's in 3-5 now, he got his degree in general studies because the GI Bill was running out. I gave him my GI Bill, and it was running out, and he said, hey, Dad, if you were me, would you spend go to school for another year and a half at 40 grand a year to get a degree in business, or would you get a general studies degree and call it good? I said, if it was me and I was going to have to pay for it, yeah. I'm like, okay, because I'm smart, I would get the general studies degree, lie about it, and call it good. He said, okay, that sounds like a plan. The Michael Garvey, our guest, he Marine combat engineer and currently a stand-up comedian, and we're going to talk about that. Michael, we're going to take a quick break, about 3 minutes, and then when we come back, I have a clip that says Armed Forces Arts Partnership. Is that funny? Can we play part of that?
There's a few of them out there. Possibly is funny.
It's possibly funny?
Absolutely, you can play it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Michael Garvey very graciously joins us today talking about his Marine Corps experience. We're going to talk about his stand-up comedian experiences and where you can find him, not only on Facebook, where you can find him on the East Coast when he's performing. We'll get a schedule, and we'll continue a discussion with him on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. More of that show right back, right next.
Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family. We had a reunion of our unit, and you hear these spouses say, is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us. And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Resources are available for military families. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
Life in the military is one of service and sacrifice. For some, that sacrifice includes physical and mental injuries or trauma that will affect their lives forever. Please join with the American Legion in recognizing and supporting our wounded warriors and their families. We need to show them that we truly are a grateful nation. We cannot allow them to be forgotten and left to fend for themselves.
For a leader, there is nothing more important than dealing with one of your soldiers who you are concerned about their emotional dealings with what we have asked them to do. You got to make sure the soldiers know that you're open at any time, any day, and you got to make sure your junior leaders are leading the same way you are. Are they encouraging soldiers instead of discouraging them from going to seek help if they need help?
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
We were rolling down this road in
Anbar Province.
Three personnel carriers.
With 16 of us on board.
All of a sudden, there's
a huge explosion.
We knew right away.
It was an IED. The first vehicle
got wasted. And those guys took
a huge hit.
Then we started taking sniper fire
and RPGs from the hills.
In today's military, women face the same dangers as men.
It's pretty amazing.
We made it out alive.
But when they come home, women veterans confront a whole different set of challenges, like unique health care issues, or not receiving respect or even acknowledgement for serving in harm's way. DAV understands the problems women veterans face, and we can help. Many DAV advisors are female veterans. They've been there, and they're ready to provide expert guidance. DAV fights to get you the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family. We had a reunion of our unit, and you'd hear these spouses say, is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us. And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Warriors should know that resources are available. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Mid-40 on a Friday. Michael McNamara here. All Marine Radio continues, wrapping up our third week. And we're privileged to be joined this morning by Michael Garvey from Annapolis, Maryland. Got his GED, and and he's got a dog. And people ask him a lot of stupid questions, and he's making his living doing stand-up comedy now. I got a text message for you, Michael. Mac, would he recommend other Marines this life in comedy? Has it been easy? Is it his passion? Does he love it? Or is it a lot more difficult than one would think? Michael, you recommend it as a course of action?
Well, it's become my passion, but it has not been easy. And I have a lot of bumps still to come. But in the beginning, I had to make that decision because it would increase my anxiety so much for like a week before a show that I had to look at it and say, is this healthy or is this actually helping or is it hurting more? And the more shows I did, the less the anxiety would come up. And it went down to like the day before a show, the morning before a show. And now it's just pretty much a couple hours before a show, which I think is normal. So it really helped me. I'm the happiest I've ever been when I get off stage. Like, when it's done, I've made people laugh, and it goes well. Like, that feeling is what I guess I'm always chasing, and that's why I love it.
I want to ask you, I've learned in 3 weeks, I've learned so much about the transition out of the military, what helps guys, what hurts guys. And so I want to ask you, guys who don't pursue their passion after their combat experiences are left kind of with a hole in their life. They go to work, their mind's not on their work because it's not what they love. Can you talk about, do you agree with that, disagree with it? Because did you see the headline about the Marine that just went to the top of Mount Everest?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Staff Sergeant. EOD guy, got wounded in Sangin, probably about 7 months before you got wounded. And he said, I needed something bigger in my life to completely absorb me so I would get out of where I used to be. And I don't know, for some reason that resonated with me. It's like, that makes total sense. And if you don't do that, and you're just going to work, and it's not what you love, and it's not what you're into, then your brain's not there. And for, you know, guys who have bad experiences in combat, and then your brain tends to kind of, drift to that place. So it's almost, to me, it's like an essential part of getting better is having something that you love that consumes you. And you sound like you're very much a part of that.
Yeah, I needed to make like the pain and the struggle worth it. And to me, like you said, I saw going back to a normal job and a normal life as being really unfulfilling. So I was like, I need to do something that I don't think I would have normally pursued if I hadn't gotten hurt. Like I have this second chance. I have an opportunity to do different things. I don't have some of the financial struggles that a lot of people have because I get a tiny bit of money and it keeps me, you know, to be able to pursue this.
You can pay your
but
bills.
Finally, yeah, I can pay my bills and, you know, I'm not a man with fancy items.
Right.
So it works out. But yeah, you got to find something bigger. Life gets overwhelming. You know, it's just like something that you can pursue it seems bigger than you, but you can do it. And that's what I'm trying to do now. There's no way before I went to Afghanistan I think I would have ever pursued comedy. And so I guess in a sense, you know, it's a blessing, but, you know.
No, it's just interesting because, you know, when you're laying in bed and now you're, and his name is Charlie Linville. And I would tell you, you can, if you go to All Marine Radio's, our page on YouTube, his interview's up there. And I tell you to listen to it because it's really cool. I mean, he went to the top of Everest and then he was talking shit about it. He said, you know, I knew these Army guys were going to try to do it a week later. He said, there was no effing way that they were getting up there before I was. And so he's, So, I mean, but it's an awesome interview. He talked about, you know, the downward spiral after he gets out of the hospital. He said, and then I go home and I'm alone. You know, and here I've been, you know, a Marine my whole life, and now I'm not. And now I'm through the recovery process, and now I'm at home sitting on the couch getting fat. He said, and my fake leg came in the mail, and I opened it, and my little girl looks at me and says, does that mean we can go to the park now? And he said, and that was the beginning of me getting off my ass and getting off the couch, going out. And it was, he said, it was the beginning of me returning to be me. So a very cool, interesting story. And he said, and when I embraced the Everest challenge, it was kind of the gateway to the rest of my life. And it was, he said, you know, he said, like everybody, I still, you know, have my days when, you know, when I can't get rid of the past. He said, but you know what? I'm now focused on my future. And I thought, wow, that's so many guys need to hear this. And hearing you talk about comedy, I'm hearing the same kind of things, that it's such a healthy thing to get up in the morning and want to go, you know, to work and want to, you know, have your passion in your life. And it sounds like it's a huge part of recovering and being healthy and being well again.
Yeah. Same thing. I didn't see a purpose in my life. I didn't know where it was going to go. It just seemed like misery. I had to find something to look forward to.
Another email question. Michael, your story is amazing. How do we find you? So how do people find you on the internet? Do you have a website? I know you're on YouTube all over the place. So how do they find you?
Facebook, Michael Garvey. I have a website, garveycomedy.com. I post a lot of pictures on Instagram. I don't really understand or like Twitter.
Michael Garvey, what comedy? What was that?
Oh, the website is garveycomedy.com.
Garveycomedy.com. All right, and they can find you, and they can find where you're appearing and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah, I try and keep it up to date with shows. I'm slowly getting better at this social media stuff.
I'll tell you what, everybody talks like it's easy. Yeah, do Twitter or put this stuff up, and then if you got to do it every day. I mean, I don't want to say you become a slave to it, but... You know, that information doesn't, it's like the Mark 19. That thing doesn't jump off the ground and get up on that vehicle. Somebody got to put it
right
there. And websites are the same way. Michael, let me play some audio and.
Please welcome Michael Garvey. Michael!
This is called the Comedy Boot Camp Graduation Show.
Man, that was my first show ever.
Is it?
Yeah, you're going to.
This is Liberty. He'll be accompanying me for the rest of the show.
That's your dog, right?
Originally going to come up.
Yeah.
Because today is daddy time, but since we match, I figure what the hell. Liberty, sit. Good boy. He is my classically trained English Labrador Retriever Show Dog Black. It's a mouthful, but I don't want people thinking that our dogs are on the same level, because they're not. Mine's better. I have him because I do suffer from the PTSD. PTSD is one of those weird things. Everyone knows about it. Nobody really knows what it is. You're just going down the road one day and your body says, hey, I'm bored. Let's create a chemical imbalance and kick this shit up a notch. When
I want to ask you, what's the you must get a great reaction from, I would say, guys who suffer from PTSD, you know, kind of poking fun at it, because it's stuff that, you know, we all live with, and you're poking fun at it, and they're laughing at it. Does that happen to you on a fairly regular basis after your show?
When I do the veteran-based shows, yeah. Like, I did a show at Gotham a couple months ago with the Armed Services Arts Partnership, and it was just, yeah, it was an overwhelming response from people, just like, you know, with the same problems, the same things, just come up to me and share their experiences, and it was cool. You know, you're not alone. And plus, people go up to me and say, like, I like that line. I'm going to use that now whenever people ask me stupid questions. Like, yeah, take it. Use it.
Do you make them footnote it?
What's that?
Do you make them footnote it? You gotta tell them that's my line.
No, they can take it.
Just don't rip it off. All right, we're going to listen a little bit more.
When I first started feeling the symptoms, I did what most people do. I went online. I started typing them into WebMD, which is not usually a good idea to try and self-diagnose. What I ended up was realizing that I am losing my mind and I'm menopausal. So there's always that. The main difference I remember was one had more flashbacks, less hot flashes. It's not all that bad, though. The PTSD, Liberty, will you heal, please? Heal. Yeah, let's focus. Good boy. But yeah, it's not all that bad. Sit down. Besides this guy being a pain in the ass. I dropped out of high school to join the Marine Corps, and now not only do I go to college for free, but they pay me to go, which kind of blows my mind. They give me a little extra help. They give me extra time on tests and on papers, which is great because, as it turns out, I'm a little slow. And no matter what they tell you or how good your argument, a picture is never worth 1,000 words when drawn onto a college essay.
How do you, as you've evolved your comedy act, is there certain subjects you like, or how do you... Talk to me about crafting comedy. How do you do it?
Basically, it comes from my annoyances a lot of times, or just what I find interesting. A lot of those jokes I still have, but I've grown them. You know, I've made them funnier, made them longer, added better punchlines. Because a lot of it, I think, is just it's good premises. Like, I don't think my punchlines are the greatest. But I think I draw people in with what I'm talking about. And certain things I like to continue talking about, like the PTSD stuff, is good because people don't know a lot about it. So any little information I can throw out is good. I continue to tell a puppies behind bars joke just because I love puppies behind bars. That's where I got my dog. And so, like, even when I didn't like the joke anymore, I would continue to tell it, and then after a while, it just grew and grew and grew, and now I'm okay with it.
Michael, do you have advice? I mean, you're becoming more and more. I'll use the word famous, but you're becoming more and more well known. I mean, last week when we talked, you said you were getting ready to do something for Google, and
that went great.
Did it?
Sarcasm. No,
I thought so.
No, I did it. That was yesterday morning.
How'd it go?
Oh, not good.
What happened?
I don't think comedy is meant to be done in the morning. And I have this joke about when people are always trying to guess what my dog is smelling, like while we're in stores, and generally they think he smells their dog.
Right.
But he's a dog, and he sniffs everything. And it kind of ends with, because I gave a speech in self service dogs in school, and I learned that dogs can smell cancer cells. So that's where the joke goes. Maybe he's smelling cancer. Maybe he's smelling a dog's cancer. Which isn't bad, and it's put pretty well, and I've never offended anybody with it. But yesterday, I added to it on the fly, kind of, because I have family members who've been diagnosed, so I started telling that joke.
Right.
So I tried adding to it and making it a little more personal, and it hit some people the wrong way, and it got really awkward, and nobody was very happy with me by the end of the show. Plus, I wasn't allowed to cuss, and I accidentally did it a couple of times, so I don't think they're happy about that.
So what was the forum? Was it a live show for Google? Or, I mean, in person with people there, or was it?
Yeah, it was a cool opportunity, and I'm glad that I did it. They were doing a workshop for veterans, helping them go over and build their resumes.
Yeah.
And they're giving like classes throughout the day. And they thought it would be a nice little icebreaker to bring some veteran comedians in before it all kicked off. And then around lunchtime, again, just, you know, to make everyone feel a little more at ease. And, yeah, so I'm glad I did it. I'm just really not happy that I took it that far. In the morning, I'm the most miserable. I do most of my writing in the morning, and I'm not thinking clearly a lot of times. And I should have held back.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those bumps in the road. It's one of those learning experiences.
Screw it. If they can't take a joke, they'll get over it. And if they're all veterans, they don't give a shit anyway. You know that.
Well, it was the Google employees.
Oh, well, the hell with them. They're not even part of our tribe, so they're just along for the ride. They can go to hell.
I'm pretty tough-skinned, but I really don't like making breast cancer survivors cry.
You're right about that. You know what? I'll tell you what. You want to know one of the beautiful things about radio? Is that you sit in a room and do it, and people can listen. I find that when I do stuff, whether it be MC event or I do my show in person and people are listening and you're doing it and then you see the look on their face when you say something, I want to stop and say, hey, man, what's your problem?
Yeah.
You know what? And so you get that instant feedback from the look on people's faces and stuff like that. That is not easy when you can see you've upset somebody. As you have said, I mean, clearly it's impacted you.
Yeah, but I go back and forth with it. Like, yeah, I felt bad. I talked to the lady for a while after the show. I feel like me and her are good now. Plus, like, I start off my act about making jokes about me getting shot. And I'm like, well, if you laughed at me getting shot, like, now what? Now, because it comes a little close to home for you, I'm an asshole. Like,
I'm with you, yeah. Michael Garvey, our guest. Michael, I got an email for you. Mac, I'm on active duty, Lance Corporal, getting out pretty soon. I think I'm funny. I have the same fear that Michael spoke of earlier in terms of performing live in front of people, but it's something I would definitely be interested in pursuing. Does he have advice in terms of how to start? Michael?
Well, if you look into the Armed Services Arts Partnership, they do stand-up comedy. He keeps telling me they're going national, but I don't know how that's working out right now. But if you're in the D.C., Virginia area, they do stand-up, they do improv, they even do some actual art stuff like painting and pottery. But to find open mics, it's so easy now. You just get online, type in whatever city you're in, open mic, and people promote them all over the place. Like anytime I go and visit a friend out of town, it's one of the first things I do before I leave is I try and find an opportunity in that town to just go do something. Just because one of my comedic goals is to do comedy in all 50 states. And I'm like, we can start knocking out states early.
So bottom line is just Google it and go do it.
Yeah. Don't bring anybody. It'll probably make you more nervous. These open mics are not a big deal. People will rarely recognize you again, like the first couple of times. Like if it goes bad, it goes bad. No big deal. They've seen bad comedy before.
They'll see it again. Michael, yeah. A final question for you. And again, I appreciate you doing this, and I hope you come back and do it again, because love the discussion from your opinion of the VA and your experiences with that, and I think sharing it makes everybody smarter. But do you have, as I said before, this whole program is about post-combat related mental health. Do you have advice you give guys if they come and sit down and want to talk to you and say, hey, man, you got anything you could share with me that'll make me smarter, that'll make me better, that'll make this transition easier for me? You got any advice that you share with guys on a regular basis when asked?
I don't get asked a lot. If I could be around veterans more, I would. But my biggest thing, which is what I struggle with, is just keeping it all inside and telling nobody. And I think that's where things build up and it gets to a dark place. It's hard for people to see what you're feeling inside, especially if you can hold it in as well as I do. Now, well, most Marines do. You know, we're very stoic. So sometimes I'm just crumbled inside and no one can even tell. So if you don't speak up just a little bit, say you just need like a little help to get the door open and the conversation going, then it just never starts and it just gets worse and worse. And then you're in this hole that becomes what seems to be insurmountable to get yourself out of, but it's not. Like I don't know what it is about me. Like I did that show yesterday and I just felt terrible. And then I got a random message from a guy that I saw at a show once, like a month ago, and it turns out he was an Air Force veteran. And the first thing he said to me was, hey man, does the dog keep you from blowing your head off? Just wondering, I could use a dog. And it was so random to me, and then we ended up being able to help each other throughout the day because, you know, he opened up a little bit. And I was feeling bad, too, so we could just have this conversation. Whereas at the end, we both felt a lot better.
Just staying connected, then.
Staying connected, starting the dialogue. Like, even if it's somebody you don't necessarily think can help you, they might know somebody who can help you.
Right.
People are very open to helping veterans these days. It's a trendy topic.
All right. Michael, first of all, thank you very much for coming on and doing this. I love doing it and all the different voices of Marines that I've heard. And so let me just give you some advice. Stay connected, bud. And you have my stuff. So if you ever need to talk to somebody, call the dude who medevaced you.
Right. I'm still blown away. I don't think that's going to settle in completely for like another hour.
All right, but, man. That's awesome. And, you know, you met Paul. Paul was sitting right next to me when it happened. So that's awesome.
Paul's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's right. One of the shows in D.C.
Where are you appearing this weekend?
No, not this weekend. Google was my show this week.
All right.
I need to get on stage again quick. After that.
Redeem myself. All right, Michael Garvey, our guest. Marine combat engineer, currently a stand-up comedian. Check him out. All you got to do is Google his name, Michael Garvey. You find him on Facebook, Instagram, but not on Twitter. Michael, thank you. We'll do this again. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Not a problem. There you go. That is Michael Garvey. We're going to talk to some Marines from 11th Marines coming up next.